And before I go any further, I want to say thank you to BBS Radio. Big thank you to BBS Radio, Don Newsom, and Seth Hendrick and Douglas Newsom over there, and everybody else who helped support this wonderful radio station that's making a difference globally, and for this great platform that we have through positive media to raise consciousness using Hollywood. Speaking of Hollywood, I have as my guest tonight entertainment industry leader and visionary Jim White, who is a VP of Human Resources at Paramount Studios, or Paramount Studios, depending on what block you live on. And what I'd like to do is give you a little bit of background about Jim, which is quite remarkable. I feel very, very fortunate to have this wonderful man on the show tonight. His website for the book he wrote, which I'm looking at right now, and it's just simply a gorgeous book, it's called www.theworldisasafeplace.com. That's theworldisasafeplace.com. So since this is internet radio, go ahead and pull that up and take a look at that website, which is incredibly creative, and as is this man. He's got so much going on. He's a vice president of human resources and development at Paramount Pictures and the author of The World is a Safe Place. He is also on the board for Beyond Shelter, and that's beyondshelter.com, and as well as spearheading ultimatelifeliving.com, which is helping Los Angeles to better itself daily, as well as providing a way for people to find travel that is beyond real estate. And I'm sure Jim will be happy to tell us more about that, because there's just so much diversity with this man. I don't know where to start or where to stop. So at one point I will bring him on and he can tell you himself. So Jim White is Vice President of Human Resources at Paramount Pictures and author of The World is a Safe Place. Originally from a small town in Iowa, Jim has lived and worked in over 22 countries worldwide, although he has called Los Angeles his home for the last 8 years. He holds a BA from Bellevue University in Nebraska and an MED in Adult Education and Cultural Diversity from UTS in Sydney, Australia. Jim White is one of the most positive people you will ever meet in your life, an accomplished author, entrepreneur, philanthropist with a greater vision for our world. He believes in the potential of every person, place, and thing in it. White authored The World is a Safe Place, a book that explores his discoveries in the world of spiritual and quantum mechanics, and is currently working on his second book, The Middle of Forever. Can't wait to see that one. As a pioneering resident in the forefront of the downtown LA loft development movement, Jim co-founded a distinctive real estate travel and lifestyle company called Ultimate Living, which is ultimatelifeliving.com. That's ultimatelifeliving.com, which plays a key role in the residential expansion of LA's burgeoning city center. Through his enterprises, Jim continues his long-standing commitment to the community, directing funding support towards Beyond Shelter, which is at beyondshelter.org, a Los Angeles-based nonprofit organization dedicated to the development of systemic methods to eradicate poverty and homelessness. White serves on the executive board of directors for this esteemed organization. And, you know, there's so much more I could say, but I'm going to actually give you a little bit more to get you into how he got into the entertainment career. He began his 16-year entertainment career with Blockbuster Video and was in store operations. He later became involved in full-scale domestic and international acquisitions, including training and business conversions for store startups, there's just so much, and it's so exciting, I can hardly wait to bring them on. And that was in Europe and Australia, overseeing the launch of over 850 new Blockbuster businesses. Oh, my gosh. And we go there regularly, Jim, so thanks for doing all that. Jim's professional journey continued as he went on to senior human resources and operation roles within Universal Music Group, Vivendi Universal Games, and most recently with Paramount Pictures, where he supports creative development, physical production, post-production, visual effects, casting, and the story department. He has also held a vice president human resources position at Roxio Inc. Napster, which is now owned by Best Buy. Oh, my gosh. There's so much. So, Jim, without any further ado, I want to bring you on so we can hear it from you of how you got to be in all these places and do all these things and that wonderful thing that happened to you when you were a little boy taking a nap with your mother when you saw that white light that looks like smoke on the wall and what that told you. So without further ado, Jim, welcome.
Well, Kate, thank you so, so much for that wonderful, wonderful introduction and welcome. I did all that. Wow, I didn't even realize I did all that until you reminded me of all that. So
that and a whole lot more, I'm sure we're going to find out.
Well, I always like to tell people when we're talking about everything that I've done that I'm still from a small town in Iowa. That's not changed at all. And so a lot of the foundational work in who I am and the things that I've been involved in came from a very strong value system growing up in the Midwest, where what we did was we helped each other all the time. So I come from a long family line of people who look around the world and say, how can I help out with that? And so when you have that energy behind you and you have sort of a strong support system like that, not only with your family but with community members and neighbors, it's really easy to do all that. And then the other secret I tell everybody is I don't wear a watch anymore. I threw that away many, many years ago.
Yeah, mine and my husband's watch are entwined together in the kitchen drawer.
It's a really, really good thing to do when you realize there really isn't any time at all, and then it allows you a lot of opportunity to do many, many, many things at once. So I feel like a very lucky and blessed person as well.
You are, and I'd like to begin our show with a thought for the day that I found in your book. I actually text messaged it to my son today, and he thanked me profusely. It goes like this. What I manifest in each moment is a small piece of a future soon to follow. And speaking of being out of time and taking the best out of each moment without, you know, feeling a lot of pressure about how many moments you're using for what, I thought that would be a very profound thought for the day for our listeners to begin our interview with. So thank you for providing that in your book, that and so much more. You know, your book is so easy to read. A person could read it in an hour if they wanted to and be forever changed once they finished. And, you know, I need to ask you this burning question because your book is so gorgeous and it's unlike any book I've ever seen before, and I have literally I have over 1,000 books. I purchased them all and I've read pretty much most of them, and I love, love, love books. And your book is the most delightful book I've ever seen.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, it's got nothing on the front except some wonderful indentation design, which is also on your website, and it's pure white. There's nothing else on it, and your name is Jim White, and I'm just so curious. Is that on purpose?
It's all on purpose, actually, in a very subtle way. In terms of the book, it's a self-published book, and when I was starting to go forward with kind of how it started, let me start at the beginning just a little bit. How it sort of started, I started journaling with all those wonderful travels I have. When I was lucky enough to get hooked up with Blockbuster at the very beginning, before anybody even knew what home video was, I was working in the video shop. I was a clerk tossing videos during my undergrad, and this thing called Blockbuster Video was invented. And I started when they had roughly 10 stores, and obviously you read that it grew into just this massive career for me, you know, touching 22 countries, living in London for 7 years, studying in Sydney, working in Copenhagen and Vienna, and the list goes on. One of the things I started to notice about traveling and coming from a small town is that we're all the same person, and that the message, whatever the message is that's being communicated, it's a simple one. And the simpler the message is, the easier it is for people to respond to it. And so I put the book out there in terms of letting people come to me on it, letting me finding me to ask questions about the book instead of me kind of pushing it out there. The actual image, the indentation that you see is sort of this trapezoid with a series of triangles. I'll describe it for the listeners here. The secret to what's on the book actually is that if you fold all those shapes together, it actually forms a triangle. And when you actually open the first page of the book and the first color photo that you see past the title page, you'll see that there's a triangle.
Right.
And the triangle being the sacred trinity of mind, body, spirit, 1, 2, 3, all the different things that the triangle represents. So that's sort of the combination, and you're very astute to realize, yeah, my name is Jim White, and I like the color white because usually when people ask me my name and I say Jim White, they hear Wyatt because of, you know, the travels that I've had living in Australia. I picked up a little accent in London as well. But actually, what white is, it's not a color, it's all colors combined. And so when people say Jim White, I say that to them, Jim White, as in the combination of everything combined, one color, all colors. And sort of an interesting response when you're talking to people with MasterCard or Visa or those folks, and they're trying to get your last name.
Well, yeah, especially when you're saying it to the uninitiated, their head kind of explodes a little bit, but it's a good thing.
Only surpassed by when you say the world's a safe place.
Yeah.
What I did is when I was looking for a title of the book, these different images and visions and things were coming into my head. So what I did was I actually put together a sheet of titles. I had a multiple list of titles for books, and I faxed it to friends that I picked up all over the world. In all my travels, I'm very fortunate enough to have an epicenter of just amazing people in London, in Copenhagen, in Sydney, and all the places I've been. I meet some amazing friends. And I faxed it to them and asked them to circle the title that rang out best to them, which seemed to really trigger something. I didn't ask what that was, but just wanted to know what they felt when they saw these titles. Circle the three most popular, and then tell me what you think about when you have these. And the world's a safe place won out. And some of the responses were, I'm just curious why you would think that. No, the world can't be that way. Or so just the title of the book, whether anybody ever reads it or whether it goes farther than your radio show, just the fact that somebody has to think about what that title means is what one of the initiation points of the book.
Right, right. And also what I'm getting from this, Jim, myself personally, is that, you know, collective consciousness really anchors itself to the media and all of the chaos and alarmist kind of things that are being reported all the time. And, you know, for me, I'd love to start a network called the Good News Network, All Good News All the Time. And what your book does is it's a very bold statement that the world is a safe place, and it's taking attention off the negativity and putting it on some light. And the light is white, and the light is the color that is all things. And so what the book spoke to me was, oh, my gosh, finally somebody said it. Somebody said it, because I come from a background that's not unlike yours, and I'll just share this with you. I know that your father is from the hills of Tennessee near the Smoky Mountains. Well,
correct.
My mother is from there, too. Your father's education went to sixth grade. My mother's went to third grade.
Wow.
She learned everything she knows through crossword puzzles, and she was an extremely intelligent woman. And so we have similar roots. And my father was a blue-blood socialite, and here's my mother, a barefoot hillbilly who has an education. And, you know, my father was he graduated college when he was 12, which means he entered college when he was 9. So I don't know how those two got together, and they did, and through biology and my choice to come forth through the two of them, here I am, and you did the same with your parents, and we are so in agreement that we choose our parents before we're born, and that they are our teachers throughout this path we're on in our physical form. And what a remarkable combination your mom and dad were for you to become who you are today, because the impact you have on our world, just by what you've done so far, if you don't do another thing, will forever have made a change to be legendary in this time and space.
Well, I really appreciate those kind words, and they mean a lot. They go directly to heart. Yes, it was interesting. My father used to have to hunt rabbits in the foothills. His mother worked in a hosiery hosiery plant, and actually was making 50 cents a week at kind of the height of her career at that time, which, you know, going back to the Hollywood message a little bit, you know, it's a far cry from what people get paid nowadays in Hollywood, which you're aware of with all the incomes coming in and for movies and things like that. One of the most, I guess, ironically interesting things with that concept is that, you know, being in the human resources role in the entertainment industry for so long, I've seen people who just make really what would be considered a fortune, and unfortunately there's some of the happiest, unhappiest people that, you know, exist out there. So it's interesting. My father learned math doing baseball scores, calculating baseball scores and sports bookings and things like that. And one of the things both of my parents had, for whatever reason, was a very strong intellect. They were both very, very intelligent. My mother used to have to walk along the railroad tracks with her family and pick up coal after World War II to be able to heat their home. And one of the things that they both held in together, and I don't know, maybe this is what drew them together, was the belief that there was more than what they had. and that together, if they worked hard enough on many levels, that they would provide for their family to be able to set the family in motion for where I am and my older brother are now. So, you know, I send a lot of gratitude and love to them and thank them for their hardship.
Yeah, they were married 45 years until your father died at 78 years old, correct?
Correct. Yeah, I think that was roughly about 12 years ago now that he actually passed, which was a tragedy, obviously, but it was one of the most amazing times in my experience, because I got to sit with him over the last 7 days of his life, and he told me every story that anybody could ever imagine. I was fortunate enough to continue to journal that whole time and write everything down that he said and gain some incredibly wonderful insights that are actually in the book.
Yeah, and you wanted to honor your father's wishes, because his words to you after his paralyzing stroke were, get me out of here, I want to die. And your wish was to just take him home and let him live out his days on his journey until he passed over to the other side in dignity. And I believe that your brother disagreed with that and thought your father could be rehabilitated. And it turned out that your father got his wish to do it just the way he wanted to with your help, and you did get to hold his hand basically until he passed over to the other side.
I was very fortunate to be able to have that experience. I'm not sure how some other people look at it, but they can possibly see it as a negative stance or whatever. But actually, it was really an amazing experience to be able to do that and allow that to happen. I had sort of come into consciousness in my teen years during the start of the AIDS epidemic, and unfortunately, I experienced about 46 friends dying during that kind of period before protease inhibitors came in and the drugs that are helping people stay alive today. So I started to understand, if you can ever, how death works, and I started to understand that death's as much a part of life as living and being born is. So I had a lot of honor and respect when my father realized that he would never ever recover. And on the other side, my brother had never had very much death or that type of experience in his life, and really believed that keeping someone alive was all that mattered.
Right, and quality of life matters a lot to you. And your brother's 6 years older than you, correct?
Correct. He's still living in Iowa.
Right, okay. Well, you know, his journey is his journey, and that's his spiritual contract. And I really love that you can send him peace and send him love and acknowledge him for how much you learned about yourself through him. And because there, you know, I have a saying, our true family is not often born under the same roof. So because someone is your blood relative doesn't mean that it feels so much like family. And you do have a spiritual contract with one another, and I believe we all chose that before we were born. So whatever your brother's journey is his journey. And I noticed in the book you said one of the greatest things you learned from your brother is that you cannot force your belief systems on any person, regardless of how convicted to them you are. And that was a powerful statement and really a emotionally mature thing to believe, feel, and live by. So I want to acknowledge you for that.
Well, again, I appreciate those kind words and that feedback again. I think if we step up higher and look around the world right now, those words are probably never more evident right now with a lot of the, you know, unrest that's happening now in the Middle East and the crisis that had occurred for many years in Ireland and the things that are happening, you know, in Israel right now, that the heritage of forcing beliefs on someone else, in my mind doesn't cause anything but turmoil with people.
Right.
And from an intellectual perspective, persuasion and suggestion and logic and intellect are the ways to mediate conflict. And falling back into my daily job, you know, at the studio and working for Paramount in human resources in my whole 20 years, that's how I solve problems. Usually there's never a solution to a problem without using intellect and conversation and dialogue. Anytime you try to force energy on people to solve a problem, you probably get back, if not the same, maybe double or triple that energy back at you. So I think, again, that's part of the awakening that we're seeing across the planet right now, that the things that we continue to try and try and try again aren't necessarily working. And I think it's in the book, I put the quote, it's a widespread quote from Einstein, that a problem cannot be solved within the same frame of mind in which it's created. And the world's a safe place is a really, really simple message. It's probably one of the purest, simplest messages that you can find, is what would the world be like? You know, it almost asks the question, what would the world be like if the world was a safe place? And people immediately respond back to me, not everyone, but some people say, well, it's not. And I look back and say, well, that's not the question I'm asking. I'm asking, what would it look like?
Right.
And you alluded to the second book. The second book, there's a trilogy, actually. I was going to surprise you with the third one as well on the call today. The second book, which is probably about 50% to 75% done, is called The Middle of Forever. And if you think about that concept, the middle of forever is right now. It's the present moment. There's really no such thing. It's actually right now in the present moment. And where the first book talks about my personal journey, the things that happened to me in my past, and some of my ideas and concepts, the second book is what other people think. I'm doing a series of interviews with friends and hopefully you, not on this call, but at some other point, and getting everyone else's story and what they think is happening in the world today and putting that all into a picture book similar to The World, the Safe Place. And then I'll just give you a real sneak preview of the third book. It takes from a quote in The World, the Safe Place. It's called Time to Make a Wish. It's Time to Make a Wish. And the third book is, what would the world look like if it was done? If everyone was happy, if everyone was complete, if everyone was in that place of fulfillment where they really are all striving to be, what would that be like? And the reason for that thought process is I'm a very goal-focused person. I believe that in order to get to the conclusion of a situation, you have to know where you're going. And so this book almost works backwards from the end of the story forward. So how do we get there? What do we have to do? And it puts tips and suggestions and things to make that happen.
Well,
so that's the trilogy.
Right, and thank you for sharing that. And that sounds awesome, and I'm really looking forward to experiencing the other two books. One thing that what you just shared brings to my mind is I'm a very firm believer that what we think about, we bring about.
Correct.
And if all we have is negative stimulus, we're going to bring about negative results. If we have stimulus that is for the greater good of mankind and to cause our synapses to repair themselves just by saying the words, the world is a safe place, I feel something going on in my brain, right? Because it's so against what comes at us through the media, society, our families, culture, you name it. It's all coming at us that, no, the world is not a safe place. Well, when I was a child, I was born an indigo child, which is spiritually wide awake. I suspect that you are also one. And I was born to an atheist family. And talk about having a sense of humor as a little spirit before I came here. I did and still do. And so I didn't have a voice in my family. Nobody understood me. I wasn't allowed to be who I was. I wasn't allowed to be authentically me. I had to pretend that I was like the people around me, which were fighting and arguing and saying hateful things and doing hateful things. And, you know, they're just on their path with their own spiritual contract. And it was just horrendously painful as a child, not knowing what I know today. Now that I've made sense of that kind of suffering, I understand exactly how I got to do it, why I chose it, who I am today, what I'm becoming, who I will be later, and how I'm evolving in this physical form and why I chose the things I chose. But I didn't have that sophistication as a child, and I really needed a safe place when I was a
right.
child. So your book, The World is a Safe Place, really speaks to the little girl in me. Because I used to sit in a hollow tree up in the hills of Kentucky on our 80-acre farm. Whenever I was finished with my chores, I was 9 years old, I'd go up there with my dogs, and I would sit inside that hollow tree like a womb and an incubator.
Wow.
And just sit there and ponder, what was I doing here, and what did life have in store for me? And I sat in there and daydreamed and had all these wonderful visions about what my life would be like. And in there, I because I wasn't sophisticated enough yet to know what was coming for me, I prayed and prayed and prayed, God, please make me beautiful so people will want to know what I have to say. So if they like what they see on the outside, they'll want to know what's on the inside. And I just prayed and prayed and prayed because I was told that I was very ugly as a child, and that was something that caused me to examine who I am on the inside so extremely, and I'm grateful for it because had I thought I was all that on the outside, I may not have looked on the inside and just be, you know, like one of those beautiful roses that doesn't have a
right.
fragrance. I want to know that I have a fragrance, like the best one ever. And so in that tree, I would examine why am I here and all of that. And what I really, really needed and wanted and prayed for as well is a safe place not just for me, but for everybody.
Wow.
Everybody, including the people who were doing me harm. I wished for them a safe place because I knew in my heart, had they had a safe place in their childhoods, they wouldn't go about hurting other people. They would not do it.
Well, not only do you have a wonderful fragrance, you're incredibly, incredibly powerful, and that story is amazing. I really appreciate you sharing it. You know, the thing about adversity and conflict and the things that maybe we just call them obstacles in life, those are the things that, you know, allow you, just like the story you just recounted, to be who you are and to make you powerful and to make you strong. When I, again, in my HR role, when I'm speaking to people and when we're going through conflict and talking, I try to allow people to realize that without these things, we wouldn't learn, we wouldn't grow, we wouldn't develop. And without the pressures, if we call them that, of daily civilization and everything that's happening, things would not become stronger. They would not evolve. They would not become better. And if you can change your mindset and get the paradigm where you actually see these things, in the book I write about living with the illusions, not in the illusions, all of a sudden the world takes on a magic place, and all you see is the beauty that's in it. And even in the disparity, I think you know that, and you mentioned that I'm actively involved in preventing homelessness in downtown L.A., there's a beauty in the struggle and the fact that we're able to help people and that we're able to do things and make change in the world. And that's actually really an amazing thing.
It is truly an amazing thing. And I went to beyondshelter.org and watched the video there, and I was just moved to tears, especially at the single dad with his son, who there weren't any places for single fathers but only single mothers, and he couldn't be in the same place with the single mothers because he's a male.
Correct.
And how he just would stay up all night and sleep in a bathroom while his son slept in his lap. He stayed awake and watched over him, and all of the things he did, where his son had a piece of candy, and he had two pieces of candy, and his dad thought he only had one, and his son said, "Here, Daddy, have this piece of candy. You're going to need it." And he said, "No, son, you keep it, because that's all we've got." And in that bathroom where they were staying the night, sure enough, you know, they wake up the next morning with no food, and that piece of candy was his son's breakfast.
Wow.
So, you know, and he's in tears saying thank you to all the people. I mean, I can barely even talk about it.
It's an amazing story, and it's an amazing organization. I was moving from New York and, forgive me, but had to move to L.A. to take my job with Napster, and had to, I say that, you know, facetiously a little bit, I never really wanted to live on the West Coast or in Los Angeles, just to due to the reputation of it being superficial and those kind of things. And when I was, my job actually transferred me here back in 2000, moving from Manhattan, I just assumed that there were skyscrapers and lofts everywhere, being a little ignorant to the West Coast. And so immediately I asked when I got here, what's in downtown Los Angeles? And I was told by several people to stay away, that it was incredibly unsafe and dirty and not a place to live. So almost inadvertently and accidentally and coincidentally and serendipitously, all those words, I kept ending up in front of the building where I currently live in. And it happened about three times. I was working out on the Universal lot and staying in Mid-Wilshire, but I kept ending up in front of this amazing 1904 loft space. It's called the Continental in downtown Los Angeles. And it was the tallest building west of the Mississippi for 50 years. They didn't go taller than 12 because of earthquake fears. And I kept ending up in front of this building. And I didn't realize at the time, I was right at the start, and I think you alluded to it earlier in my bio, that it was the rebirth and the renaissance of downtown Los Angeles. And so all I knew was I was getting this historic, amazing loft space for one-tenth of the price of what it would be in New York. And so I was very excited and moved into the building, got all set, and then looked out the window and realized a couple of things. One, literally, I was one of the only people living in downtown Los Angeles, actual people who were living and working. At that time, there were about 2,700 people who were actual residents. There are 47,000 now in the last 8 or 9 years. So that was one sort of dawning on you moment where you realize, oh, my God, I'm the only one who lives in my building. I'm the first one here. And then the second one was when I saw the 4,000 or so homeless people out in the street in tent city all around my building. I didn't understand. I literally couldn't comprehend what it was. I'd never seen it to such degree, especially in the United States. New York, it's a little bit more controlled and managed a little bit in a different way. And so I started, you know, walking out into the street and just walking into the thick of the homelessness, completely fearless because I was ignorant and completely ignorant to what was happening and what it was. And I started looking around saying, what? It looked like a bomb went off. And so I started to inquire at Universal in different places. I'm like, what is that? What's happening? And they're like, well, that's LA's homeless problem. I'm like, you're joking. I mean, I was completely paralyzed in ignorance about what was happening. And I brought tears to my eyes, just like when you see the video. And I just, coming from my Iowa background and everything inside of me, said, someone has to do something about this. So I started to inquire. I'm asking who's doing what, who's doing whatever. And I was a little disappointed in my answers about what people were doing.
Right.
And I started to study the problem, and it's a massively complex problem. To call it just homelessness is just a very blanket way to describe multiple issues of schizophrenia, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, just a multitude of, we could spend 10 hours talking about what the actual issue was.
Right.
And going back to my philosophy that you have to focus on something, and it has to be simple in the solution, and you can only do what you can do at the time you're able to do it, and you take baby steps. I started to explore what agencies I could get involved with to be able to help. And out of the sort of a coincidence through somebody else, I got the name of a woman named Tanya Toll, who's the CEO and president of Beyond Shelter, who's been doing the work in Skid Row for 25 years. And I picked up the phone and called her and said, hi, I'm a downtown resident. I'm going to be writing this book. I want to give the proceeds from the book to somebody. You know, what do I need to do? And she broke down on the phone to me and she said, you know, this is one of the worst times we've ever had. And I'm so thrilled that I met you, even though I don't know you. And so we started a kindred friendship, and I got actively involved with helping the organization. And the organization specifically aims at helping homeless women and families, men, who have children. Because in my sort of naive ignorance of walking around downtown, I saw these children on the street. And I thought, wow, this is great. There's kids playing on the street, not realizing these are homeless kids who are actually in the street. Their parents had nowhere to go. They were sleeping in the car. They were sending the kids to school from the street. And my brain just couldn't fathom that. So I got actively involved in the organization, using any Hollywood connection I had for promotion, talking about the organization, public speaking about the organization. Here at Paramount last year, we did a 20th anniversary fundraiser on the lot for the organization. I've done multiple events downtown, and anything I can do to discuss the organization or get people involved or bring people to the crisis center, I do that on a regular basis.
That's fantastic. I am so, so thrilled that there's someone like you out there who you say you're walking around in ignorance. Well, bless that, because it caused you to believe you could make a difference, and you certainly are. And I want to give that website to our listeners. It's Beyond Shelter, BeyondSHelter.org. And for the book, The World is a Safe Place, it's theworldisasafeplace.com. And, Jim, at this time, I'd really love to give our listeners our toll-free call-in number for anyone who'd like to call in and ask you a question or make a comment. That's toll-free worldwide. It's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Line 1 is 530-327-7602. Line 2 is 530-776-5185. Line 3 is 530-413-4511. Listeners, if you have something you'd like to say, please don't worry about interrupting our conversation. We'll just put a bookmark in what we're saying and go back to it when we're finished with the call. But please do call in and get your questions answered or your comments heard. And, Jim, I just want to say that what impact you're making on the world is something that everybody can do. And I'd like to right now kind of segue into that nap you took when you were a small boy sleeping there on your parents' bed, and how it was, I guess, midday, and your mother was asleep, and you were pondering, I love the way you said it, what worries she was dreaming about, or however you put it. It was just beautiful. And how you were looking at the wall. The wall was pink with no pictures on it, and there were red drapes with embroidery just fell on the floor like a vaudeville theater. And on one wall it was pink, and you were staring at that wall, and something formed in the middle of that wall that looked like a puff of smoke. And then it started sparkling, and then it grew bigger and bigger and bigger. And you got a message out of that that is inborn, innate in every single human on this planet has it. We all know what that message is, and we hear it at different times in our lives, and you happen to hear yours while you were about to take a nap, or maybe you were in hypnagogy, half asleep, half awake, and you saw this vision, and you heard this message. Would you mind telling our listeners a bit about that and describe for them how that felt for you and how wonderful you can remember that?
Oh, I remember it like it happened, like it's happening right now. I think those naps that we were talking about that my mom would like me to take were actually for her and not for me, because I usually didn't sleep during that time at all. It was actually when I did my processing and kind of laid there as a little boy. And when I remember remembering, as I think everybody does at some states, maybe somebody remembers a birthday party or their first whatever happened, I just remember being alive and laying in the grass as a little young man, wondering who and what I was. I put my fingers in my ears and pulled my hair and thought, oh, my God, what is this? And playing with the other neighborhood kids and things, it was kind of clear what I wasn't. Similar to your experience, Kate, you know, just feeling like you weren't belonging to anything. Playing ball and doing those things weren't really things that I did or really enjoyed. And so when I had this nap time, I was, you know, forced to stop and focus a little bit. And I remember that distinct afternoon when I was laying there wondering, you know, what was happening with my mother, who was just exhausted from taking care of the two small boys and taking care of our family and all of that. And just that jargon that goes on in your head, that constant dialogue of the ego talking, even at a young age, kicking in. And I just remember being puzzled and warmed by this feeling that came over me. And we lived on a beautiful lake in Iowa. We were very fortunate to grow up in an aquatic environment with a 3-mile lake. And we had turtles and ducks and canoes, and we just had all kinds of wonderful things. And when I was looking at the wall, I saw this flickering, sort of smoky, sort of disco, sort of sunlight, sort of, I could give you many descriptors of what it was. And actually what I thought it was a reflection from the water, flickering off. But it wasn't that, because it was three-dimensional and it had form. And it was one of the safest, warmest, loving feelings, like taking a nice hot bath in beautiful jasmine and lavender and scent and everything. And even at that young age, I was just puzzled by what it was. Incredibly curious and incredibly inviting and open to whatever the experience was. And in the book I write, I looked over to my mom thinking, is she seeing this? And should I nudge her? Should I wake her up? Should I ring the bell and get everybody here to see it? But I knew at that time it really was just for me. And it engulfed me, and I engulfed it, and we danced, and we laughed, and we moved into whatever it was. And again, it's difficult in words to describe what the experience was in it, but it seemed like it lasted a second, and it seems like it lasted forever. And it is inside me right now as I describe it. You hear me stutter with passion a little bit of whatever it was. And at the time, it happened, and then when it didn't happen, I became a boy again. And was doing all the things that happen with a little kid, breaking things and running and laughing and all of that. And then periodically, as you said, that this happens with some other people, you know, throughout my life, when the time was right, when the ray of sun hit me just perfectly, or in that quiet time, I call it out of time, when everything went still, there was a message for me. And at the time, as a little boy, I couldn't articulate those words. I was speaking, but my language wasn't very clear. But the message is what was in the book. The world is a safe place. And there is nothing but fear, false evidence appearing real. It's not real. It's not true. And the end of the story is, ultimately, everything's fine. And again, to the thought we talked about a little while ago, if you can get to that place where you know at the end, with your heart of hearts, that everything will be fine, it allows you to walk through a homeless population with courage, looking for a way to solve the problem. It allows you to sit down, hopefully, and I'm not a mediator of wars, but you can sit down with both sides and figure out a way to discuss the conclusion to what's going on. You can go into a relationship with love fully in your heart and not be afraid that you're going to be hurt. It empowers you in so many ways to do so many things.
Right, right. And my husband calls me a word goddess, so I want to draw a parallel here for you. And
please.
I feel just an urge to do it, so I'm going to do it. Whatever's in my head needs to come out of my mouth.
Please.
Because I was so repressed as a child. I must. That's why I have a radio show. So you were taking a nap that changed your life, and Napster brought you to L.A.
Correct.
Napa Napster.
Oh, you see, you caught me there for a minute. It's a long day after work today, and I missed that one. Napster, I love that.
Oh, I immediately got that connection.
I love that. That's fantastic. I love that. I play with those things that other people have brought forward from nowhere to now here. And
yeah.
In Spirit with Inspiration, all that. That's a really good one. I'll have to use that one. I'll make sure I write that one into the third book.
Yeah, I would, because that taking a nap, when you were taking a nap and you got that insight, it was telling you about your future. And I opened the show with the thought for the day, which again was, what I manifest in each moment is a small piece of a future soon to follow. So your nap turned into Napster that brought you to L.A. that's helping you find permanent housing for the homeless. And what a perfect person to have in human resources at Paramount Studios. You know, I'm also a talent manager. I don't know if you know that. I've been almost three decades in the business. I started when I was 6 months old. I'm kidding. And I've been in the business a long time. I was an actor for 15 years. I was an agent in Beverly Hills, and I've been a manager now for the rest of the time. And I'm what's known as a progressive talent manager with a focus on consciousness. And I go around and do these seminars for the Breakdowns Express. You're familiar with that?
No. Tell me more. The Breakdown Express?
Yeah, it's where all the castings come from for New York, Los Angeles.
Oh yeah, okay.
Canada, and just, you know, all the main things that are being cast. That's where you get your information from.
I did
a six episode series on the law of attraction and the entertainment industry and how to apply that. And so I interviewed a casting director for six episodes, and that's been aired and launched. And here I have Spiritual Hollywood, and every client I represent, the criteria for me signing a client is if they are willing to face their greatness. If they're not, I can't help them. If they are willing and courageous enough to get how great they are, then we have a really good time and their careers take off. And I just had one booking today for Ghost Whisperer from a very enlightened young woman named Kat Hammonds who booked it and got her a good day rate and got her the whole thing. And you know, that just makes my heart jump for joy to be somebody who can make an impact in Hollywood and use Hollywood as a force for positive media to make a difference because, you know, the people who are in the films and working at the studios and behind the scenes as well as in front of the camera, who they are make a difference.
You're doing wonderful, wonderful work yourself with this, and you have just triggered a thought in my mind. The loft space that I have downtown, again, I'll just, you know, put up great praise and gratitude how fortunate I am to have found the space and have it find me. Again, I have the top floor, if you can envision. It's in the executive floor of the bank for many years, 27-foot ceilings, floor-to-ceiling windows. It's a stunning space. And a lot of people have approached me over the years to do filming in there, and I decided to go ahead and allow a Tropicana orange juice commercial to occur there. My mother was visiting from Iowa, and I thought it'd be cute to have the production in there and let her see it. You being in the industry, you know how that can be. There were 65 people burying into my loft with lighting and grip and cameras and all these things, and I noticed a real edge with the production. They just, you know, came in, and there was a lot of tension, and people didn't seem really happy. And I couldn't understand when people who were doing such amazing work and having fun at their job, it should be, they weren't. And then something clicked in my mind, and I thought, what am I going to do with this money for this filming that I'm going to get? I'm going to make some money off of it, and I don't really need any more money. I have everything that I need. What am I going to do with it? And I heard something in my head that said, make sure it goes to the homeless. Make sure the money goes to Beyond Shelter. And make sure the production is aware. And so I ran to the computer immediately as they were setting up and get everything going and typed up a little note about Beyond Shelter and that every penny of the production money that I was getting for it was going to go to help the homeless. And I ran to the head of the production manager and all the people on site, and I passed out this flyer. And I have to tell you, Kate, it was like a wave of love and joy came over the room, and they stopped what they were doing, and they looked at each other, and they took the piece of paper and reread it, and they looked at me and they smiled, and it was as if everybody's personality changed, like, instantly, and they had positive energy, and they were happy, and they were excited, because they were given a purpose, or not given, but presented with a purpose of what they were doing that actually made the work joyful and fun.
Right, and your mother had a better experience because of it, too, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was amazing. She actually sat at the top. We have a deck on the upper level, and she got to watch it all happening and seeing that. And then it was really wonderful because I took that 65 group that was in the loft and shared with them not only that event right there, but also started spreading the word for Beyond Shelter. And that's really what clicked into my mind at the time. On the receiving side of it is I have to get the word out about this organization. They're doing amazing things. They built two projects, one at 55th and Broadway. It's called Broadway Village 1, and one down on 75th and Broadway, where they've taken funds from donations and grants and things and actually built two buildings for low-income families to actually live in. So they have an arm besides just taking donations to help people from hitting the street. They're actually building housing here in Los Angeles. So just getting the word out there through our medium of entertainment, whether it's this show or it's a dialogue or speaking to people or having people on the lot, it's a catalyst and an opportunity to spread the word.
Certainly. And, you know, I got a big aha as you were sharing with me. And I don't know if you know this, but, again, I'm feeling this urge to let this come out of my mouth.
Please do. Keep them coming. They're good ones.
Okay. Is the urge that you felt to let the production know that every penny of what you were going to make from the production was going to feed the homeless and to house the homeless, what inspired you to do that was your higher self. It was your knower. It was divinity working through you. And it seems that you have an innate ability to do that and hear that voice and act upon it. And I believe that all the information you needed to know for your future you saw when you were taking that nap, and that in that smoke, in that light, in that wall space that you were watching that became three-dimensional, all this information was there. And you're just getting it as it's meant to be given to you, and you're following it. You transformed every person on that production just by sharing your heart authentically like that. And every person on this planet would be completely authentic and who they really are if they would simply discover their purpose. And you said it best. You said once the production team knew they had a purpose, their whole personalities changed like a wave of love and joy. And that's all it takes for anyone on the planet to feel better about themselves, is to know what their purpose is to know that they matter, is to know that if they weren't on this planet, there'd be a giant missing, that every single thing they think, do, and say is important and vital and makes a difference in the world. And so many people feel like they are worthless and don't matter and don't have a voice, and, you know, who are they to say that they can make a difference? Well, who are they to say that they can't? And, you know, what you're doing is transforming lives just by breathing, and that's what all of us are capable of. And, you know, where you're at in your life right now is no accident whatsoever. And, you know, I believe that you knew this when you were born. And to try to morph into other people and try to fit in places because you didn't feel like you belonged and try to do things that other people like and join all the best clubs and be popular and all that when that wasn't really what you were interested in, you know, I understand that journey. I understand that quest, and I understand what that taught you. It taught you that being authentic is really the only truth there is and the only way to live. And that's the only way to express God, and that's the only way to allow creator, universe, whatever you want to call it, to be expressed through you. And that's what we are, is walking expressions of our creator. And it sounds like you really are good at getting out of the way and just letting that come through. So good for you.
And I know you can't see me right now because we're just on a call together, but I'll tell you what, I'm holding up a very big mirror, and I hope you're looking right back into it. Because you're talking to yourself. I just happen to be in your mail form, by the way, just so you know.
Sweet thing to say. Thank you. And I wanted to give you my acronym for fear. I heard you say false evidence appearing real. That's absolutely true. And I've taken the fear acronym up a notch. You want to hear what I've come up with?
Please do.
Feeling excited and ready.
Perfect. I love that. I love that a lot.
I have an acronym for Satan.
Okay.
Okay, seeing all things as negative.
I love that. That's really, really good. That's good for you.
I have fun with the words, and, you know, I'm writing a few books myself. And
I was going to say, I'm going to have to push you. I'm going to have to push you to write a book if you're not on your way. I don't know if you've ever done it before. There's not a lot of books out there to tell you how to write a book, and so I kind of went on it on my own, just, you know, giving it a shot, and I put a storyboard. I took the movie-making concept and put a storyboard up in my loft. I'm lucky enough to have lots of space, and put these massive wall flip charts all on the wall with all the 20-so chapters I started out with. And whenever I felt so inspired in the middle of the night or whenever it happened, I'd start writing on the wall with the pen. And then eventually when it all pulled together, after a couple of years, I pulled it all down and put it into a manuscript. And the photos, if you notice in the book as well, the concept of the book was to allow touch with the texture of the outside of the book. And the sort of print colors were for visual in the images. And then the words were all placed together to kind of stimulate everything at once. And the photos that you see in the book were actually all photos taken in different areas of downtown Los Angeles.
Did you notice that?
Yeah, there's the Second Street Tunnel that you probably recognize in the book, with a long tunnel which represents, you know, the journey and things at the end, and things from different shops in downtown. And just to kind of, when people ask about the photographs, they always ask and say, oh, you know, where were these taken? And it was also to show that you can look at things in many different ways, and things like downtown Los Angeles, what were people looking at several years ago in despair, and these stunning buildings that had gone, you know, completely in disrepair. There's beauty in everything that you see, even in the things that people deem the most hard to look at or the ugliest. There's a lot of beauty in everything, and when you see that, it just starts to evolve, and that's where the, you know, the quantum theory comes in a little bit, about the observer affecting the observe. And I'm a strong believer in it. And whenever, even to this day, in downtown Los Angeles, even though we have LA Live now and the Ritz-Carlton Hotel ready to open and all these just amazing things have happened, I continue to look into the future when I look at the buildings, and I see it done. I see the streetcar back on Broadway. I see the theaters all back in operation. I see people in joyous conversion and conversation walking around down there. And I've seen that from the moment that I walked in down there and or walked into downtown. And I see that in people in my job. Part of my job and my role has always been, in my physical job here in this reality, has been to look for the best in people and bring that out in them by asking them questions they maybe never thought about before. And obviously from the recruitment perspective, when you're interviewing and hiring, and I do that all the time, whether I'm sitting at Paramount or I'm sitting wherever, I do it in the grocery store, I do it on the park bench, and I try to allow people through a dialogue and conversation for them to realize what their purpose is and what they really want to be doing.
Exactly, and that's the best thing you could do for anybody. And you also have something that you say in your book that angels aren't made, they're
found.
They're found. Well, you know, who would know that better than you, Mr. Biggest Wings in the World?
I hope they get bigger. I'm not done yet. I woke up one day and I'm 47 years old and I thought, gosh, I'm just a kid. I'm just getting started.
Or I'm 53 and I'm just a kid and I'm just getting started. I'm having the happiest childhood ever. And, you know, and it's something that you can create, and you can start from right where you're at, right here, right now. And, you know, we're coming up on the last couple of minutes of our Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I told you it would go fast.
It went really fast. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and theworldisasafeplace.com. Please go there and check out this book. It really is pleasing to all the senses. It even smells good.
it's meant to. Thank you.
Welcome. And www.beyondshelter.org. Check that out. Also check out www.ultimatelifeliving.com. And, you know, Jim, to have someone like you at Paramount Studios in the Human Resources Department, what a gem. What a gem, and how progressive of Paramount Studios to have you in the position to be a mediator and help people understand that no problem can be resolved in the energy that it was born in. It needs to shift. It needs to evolve. It needs to expand. It needs to go somewhere else. And in so doing, change the people involved. And that's what expansion is. And I believe the world is a safe place. I believe that whatever's going on in it happens to be pure expansion, including the economic whatever people are calling it.
I call it
pure expansion. Correct. And, you know, I don't listen to the negativity. I listen to what makes the world a better place. I listen to, you know, keep my eye on the prize. What is it that the end result will be? Like you said, you vision it all back in order. You vision it all a hustling, bustling place of joy. And it can be. And it starts with one person. And if you believe that person is you, then it is. If you believe that person isn't you, then it won't be.
Correct.
And what does it cost you to believe? It costs you nothing to believe. It costs you everything if you don't. It's free. You can have all you want, and it doesn't make you fat. So pay out.
That's true. That's true.
So anyway, I want to thank you for doing what you're doing, for being born in this lifetime. What a great time to be alive to do what you do, for speaking your truth, and for hearing divinity flow right through you into everything that you touch. And, you know, I know you're a human being in physical form, and I know that your body's carrying around an amazing spirit. And thanks for sharing that with us tonight here on Spiritual Hollywood. And I'm excited to see what's next in your wonderful future, and you know, whatever's going on right now is perfect, and there's something perfect about everything. And again, I thank you, and we're now at the end of our Spiritual Hollywood Hour, and
great.
I want to remind our listeners that the last six letters of attraction are action. So, you know, be inspired by everything you heard tonight, and go create the life that you were born to live, and let your inner child express itself through you, and just give yourselves a big hug. Good night, everybody, and thanks again, Jim, for being my guest.
Thank you very, very much.